Please, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeff, and thanks everybody for coming. I'm glad you're here. And I'm glad to be here. Just a little background about myself. I don't want to take too much time about that. But I'm a former English teacher, spent 10 years as a high school English teacher. Went to private industry for a few years as a software trainer, consultant with the work with schools. And I've spent 20 years at a service agency in New York State, which there are 12 of them that cover geographic areas of New York State for technology. My area is just north of New York City, Westchester, Rockland, and Putnam County. It's a suburb, much like if you're this suburb of Chicago. And we work with 62 school districts dealing with a whole host of education technology issues. But one of the big, we have a whole department of educational technology trainers and professionals.
Is your mic working? Because it's a little low.
I'm sorry.
It's a little low in the back.
I can hear that. Sorry. I'm not going to go over all that. Let's just say I have a little experience, and I'm really glad to be here. I'm going to try to bring two messages today, one generic and specific and large, and one that's dealing with technology, because I believe there's a couple of issues here, and I'd like to frame the issue a little differently. If I was going to ask you, and it's interesting that Kozin, in their digital leadership divide, 56% of educational technology leaders are still saying their number one problem is integrating technology into curriculum. Not hardware issues, all the other issues that go along maintenance, but this is the number one issue. And when I ask people, when I go out and do planning with people, what are the obstacles, other than money, what are the obstacles that you face in integrating or transforming or having your vision become reality? A lot of the things you see on the screen are what come up. You know, anything from fear of technology, fear of change, staff doesn't share the vision, multiple district priorities, there's 8 things going on, all kinds of initiatives, we're being trained in a million different things. There's turf issues, time issues, there's leadership issues, building culture issues. The thing that I want to really start off today with has nothing to do with technology. I'd like to expand the conversation to say instead of professional development only, we also talk about, because look at how many of those issues have nothing to do with technology, have to do with people, have to do with human beings. And we don't focus on that. We focus on providing training on specific skills to teachers and think that they're going to change their behaviors and their classroom practices by adopting a new technology. It's not. These are all human issues. So I'd like to say that in addition to the technology competencies that we use professional development so often to focus on, you know, with our net standards for the teachers and administrators, et cetera, implementing these skills, best practices, and trying to model them in all different ways, we also should expand this to human resource development, where we're really talking about changing people's behaviors and actions and practices that they've had for years, even they're human beings. So if you're a person who comes to the classroom and likes to be always in control, are you going to be the best guide on the side, no matter what technology you have? How do you actually change that? It's a personality piece of you. Those personality chunks don't change easily. And I believe that we need to start to focus a little bit on that other side. Otherwise, we're shooting at the wrong target. We're shooting at technology, 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 but we're not getting the change that we want. We need to start to focus on the human side of things. So the thing before I get into the actual technology part, because I know this is a technology session, this is not just for teachers. It's for principals. And if you're a director of technology or some other level in a school district, it's for you. There isn't a single person that doesn't have to go through some human resource development to transform. Because if you're a leader, if you're the superintendent of the school, everything that exists in that school, you're responsible for. You're accountable for it. So if it's still going on after all these years, you've got to look to yourself and not blame the people around you. So focus on implementing the technology. It's absolutely, we need those competencies and skills in our staff. But what we really want to do is create confident self-learners. We cannot train every teacher on every product every time a new version comes out, every time a new product gets adopted. You really want people to be trying to be self-learners wherever possible. And I've been doing a lot of work with teachers about leaders. Leaders at every level of the organization. If you look at leadership as a different definition, not a definition of leader as hierarchy, because then, you know, you got your superintendent, assistant superintendent, you work your way down, and the last person is the teacher in the classroom, and maybe than the student. That's not what we're talking about leadership. Leadership is saying, I, from where I stand in my domain, what I have in front of me, I'm responsible for, I'm the leader, I'm the one that's going to go out. Once you get that concept of I'm a leader into teachers, into principals, into administrators, they're accountable for their learning. They're accountable for using the best tools with their kids. So, we need to provide professional development and human development in ways that lead to the changes we want, not just to adopting skills. And I'm going to skip over these because if it's possible, what I'd like to do is have extra time for questions at the end. So I'm a real firm believer in online, and I'm late to this game, online professional development. I have to say that over the years, it's been a niche product. To me, it was like read a book, write, respond. Look at a videotape, respond. The tools have really, really changed. Online learning, professional development for teachers, principals, and administrators, I'm not going to talk about children right now, is something that can really start to address some of the major issues. I see one of the major issues with the teachers that we work with. Even if the school district has the money, they don't have the time to pull teachers out of the classroom to do the professional development that they need. So, we've got high-stakes testing going on. If teachers are out for that 70 hours or 50 hours or 40 hours out of their classrooms, that's a lot of classroom time that's missed because of all the new testing that's taken away from instructional time. So we believe that, but also professional development online, good stuff, would give you more choice. Right now you're limited to what's being offered by your school or what's around you physically. You can now, with online learning, tap into the best around the world and have a whole choice of options for professional development that might not be available to you in your school or in your geographic area, which you could drive to. So online learning has a lot to do there. I also like online learning because if it's generated from the teacher, not from a company, and I'm going to show you an example of where the teachers have come together and suggested and designed courses, it really isn't reinventing the wheel. One of the things that drives me crazy is to see one school district do some great stuff and it's just at that school district next door, the teachers have to go through the same process to kind of get to the same place. Once you create an online course, it's there forever. You can add to it, you can change to it, you can build on it, you can incorporate new tools when they come out. But it's not like you've collected your intellectual capital and put it in one place, and now you can start to continue to use it and continue to build on it rather than reinvent the wheel every time it's taught. So that's also a good thing. And finally, I would say that there's a lot going on. 20 states of Michigan right now has passed legislation that every student will take an online course before they graduate. We have school districts that are just beginning to say it's a graduation requirement. Every student will take an online course before they graduate. I think it's imperative that teachers, if this is the direction we're going and that kids will all be, because this is the way they're going to learn in life themselves, that teachers be at least familiar with what the experience is of online learning. So I think that just for that perspective, it's good also. So now I'm going to try to log in. Let me go back. And you can't see it here for some crazy reason. Let me do this. I'm going to come down. Browser. We're going to log in live to accelerate you in New York State. This is one of the service centers like myself. There are 12 of them. This one is in upstate New York. And it's called Accelerate You. And what they do is they'll collect suggestions from around the state from teachers who say, we need a course in something. Let me just log in. And this is meant as an example of what's possible. And I like this. As I said, I'm late to the game, but I'm really getting excited about it. When I come up, it will actually, on my left side here, it's giving me the courses I'm already enrolled in. But I want to show you their entire course catalog and some other things before I actually get into a course. So I'm going to go into the course listings. And these are my courses, but I want to look at all courses. So that's the first thing is to look at the breadth of what's being offered to give you a sense. So you can see assessments to support student learning. Now you're going to see things here like self-paced, facilitator-led, and instructor-led, and I'll explain that in a minute. But you can see collaboration on internet and research opportunities. These are all suggested by teachers. This is a nonprofit. This is like a service agency. This is not a company. critical thinking, community leaders course for online facilitators, curriculum and gap analysis to assess teaching, differentiated instruction, diverse brains and special needs learner. We're going to go in and look at that course. Document-based questions, elementary social studies assessment, facilitator, get your hands on that science, getting ready for mentoring, internet in the classroom. Look at the breadth of what's available to you. And you can go in and learn about who's instructing the course, what the syllabus is, et cetera, et cetera. But let's leave that. Let's go back and let's look at my courses. Well, let me do one other thing first. Just to show you what kind of tools are out there, this is no longer... no longer just like a correspondence course where you read, and then you just, these are extra. This is outside the actual course itself. You can have a professional journal that you can, you know, maintain reflections and so on. What's a nice feature is they built it, if you choose to share your journal or you choose to share your web links or learning experience or rubrics or DBQs, the other people who have chosen, it goes into a database with other people who have done that and chosen to share it. And I'm a real firm believer that that's something we should all be doing, is sharing our DBQs, sharing our web links, sharing our knowledge and information. So these are all tools that are built in that you can go in and create. Now I'm in a sort of a demo mode here, so I'm not going to see this. Let's go back to professional development. Let's go into courses. I'm going to actually go into a course. You can see I'm in my courses, and they've enrolled me just for today in a whole group of courses, but I'm just going to go into a demo on diverse brains and a special needs learner, just to give you a sense. It will talk about who the instructors are. Now, these are the course developers, and I'll give you a little bit over here, a little information all about them. There's three kinds. Self-paced means there's no teacher, you just go in on your own. That's, the research says, the least successful, because you do things... no one knows, you don't sign in, it's the hardest one to take and it's the least successful, research shows. There's facilitator-led, where there's someone who's going to interact with you and monitor your learning, but they're not professional experts in that subject area. And instructor-led is you're going to have an instructor who is monitoring, working with you, and is an expert in the subject of diverse brains and special needs learner. So that's the three categories. What I want to do right now is you can learn about the course, communications, if you go across the top here, you can see there's course discussions that are scheduled. There's a chat room that you can schedule chats. There's group news, etc. So you can have, there's a live interactive part of this, and then there's the asynchronous part of this where you can go in and do other kinds of things, okay, course discussions. Let's go group members. You can see who else is in your course with you, and you, if there's their emails, that you can converse with them. That's a big part, that you have a community that you're learning with. You're not just sitting there by yourself at night and you don't know who else is in the course. You don't know who the instructor is. You don't know what's going on. Now the course materials themselves. This is the actual, there's sound with this, but this is the actual beginning. And I'm going to skip right to this one part here, which is the special needs learner. Who are these kids? I just want to show you how things have changed. There's a little activity here as a start on. It says move on. So I click here. And as I click on each, so this is maybe you know this student. He loses his temper with everyone. He will look you in the eye and continue doing just what you asked him to stop, et cetera, et cetera. It goes through and it starts to look at each individual type learner. So I'm just going to click through this. He repeatedly clears his throats or grunts. He exhibits involuntary or sudden rapid body movements, etc. So we're identifying different types of students. So now we're done. It says move on. And now you can start to actually interact. So you take this student. He loses his temper with everyone. He will look you in the eye and continue doing just what you want him to stop. Which one of these over here, and we've done, there's been other lessons that have introduced these concepts to you. Would you say this would go for? Okay, oppositional disorder, so you drag it over, and yes. Okay, and you would do that for each one. It gives you a little sense of what's possible there. If I want to dig deeper, or let's do a scenario reflection. I want to reflect a little bit. You actually have a journal built in online for you, and you can add your journal. You can see it's privacy, gives you the privacy. Or you could, if you have a lot of journal entries, you can look at them all. Here's where you work with your journal. You could dig deeper into this particular lesson to learn more about these learners. And there's sites in here to go to and places where you can go search engines where you're actually going out and doing things. This is not the old type of course where it says read this online and write an essay. These courses are really thought out. They're using blogs, they're using journals, and they're using a lot of the technology that's out there. So let me just back up for one second here. When you do this, by the way, they do send you through an evaluation to see if you're ready to take the course. You know, just so you know what to expect. What kind of a person are you? How do you like to learn? Are you one that can self-pace and that kind of thing? They do that, and they also send you through a technical workup automatically to see if you have the plugins and everything that you need to work on the machine. So they've worked out a lot here, and I believe that it's a really interesting way to start to learn. There's no other way that we, you know, there's a lot of like strategies, hiring retired teachers to come in and push into the classroom to do certain things, but this has to be one of the many tools we use to really address the professional development issues. So in closing, what I'd like to do is just to sum up two things. We need to add HR to PD, human resources to professional development. And there's ways to do it. And this afternoon I'm going to talk a little bit about how we do that. We need to look at online learning as one of the tools, and you're going to see tools from the other panelists for our professional development. And third, and I would say this is really important, we need to walk our talk. When I say walk our talk is, we talk about how important professional development is to the success of our technology vision. But my experience is, when the budget is under stress, when the budget's being cut back, the very first thing that gets hammered is our professional development lines. And we don't live up to our stated value of professional development. We'll put other things ahead of that. And I think we really need, and when you do that as a leader, when you tell your staff that professional development is important, but then when the budget really gets crushed, you push away professional development and try to give it short shrift, you lose credibility with your staff as a leader. They pick up on it, even if they never say it out loud. So I'd say the three things, add HR to PD, look at online learning, see what's available to you, and the third thing would be walk the talk. Put the emphasis on professional development and on human development, because that's what's going to take us to the next level. Thank you.
Thanks. Do you need to switch the internet?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Our next speaker.
There you go. With your.
I'm not going to be.
Oh, you're not. Okay.
You
might as well.
There
you go.
Charlene is going to speak next, and she has a really interesting program with professional learning communities and a laptop incentive for teachers, a voluntary program, which sounds like it's worked out pretty well, so she'll be going with details on that.
Yep. Okay, so as...
We're going to have questions at the end.
Yeah,
we have 15 minutes questions at the end.
Okay. So as Jeff said, I'm Charlene Chaucis, and my official title is Technology Training and Integration Manager at Stevenson High School. And those of you that are familiar with Stevenson High School probably have heard the term professional learning community associated with Stevenson High School. And as a professional learning community, we actually have a commitment to ongoing professional development. We believe that it's a job-embedded and collaborative process, but it's not a singular event. It's not something that you do at the beginning of the year. It's not something that you do in a summer workshop. It's something that's ongoing. We have teachers that meet at the beginning of a school year during the institute days or the professional development days, and they also meet during 8 specified student late arrival days, 4 of which are teacher planned. In addition to that, our teachers meet every Monday morning for a brief period of time. We have a delayed start on Monday morning. So we have built in to our schedule professional development, so it's ongoing, it's collaborative. What the teachers do at the beginning of the year is they set goals, and these are goals that they can measure at the end of the year, and they continue to work on those goals throughout the year. Some of the 21st century challenges that I've identified that educators have is to be sure that technology is not being used for the sake of using technology. It can be daunting a little bit to keep up with all the new technology that's coming out. And you want to be sure that when you choose technology that you find technology that's useful to students at all different levels. So how are teachers using to support and enhance students' ability to learn is what you want to look at. Is there a magic bullet? I don't know if there's a magic bullet, but something that Pete had said that you have, he talked about the staff not sharing the vision. It's important that you start with a vision, that you have a vision that in the staff development should be rooted in the goals and vision of your district. You want to focus on how technology can be used to improve instruction. That's what technology should be used for. If it's in your vision that all learners are going to be effective users of technology, then teacher technology proficiency is a beginning benchmark that you want to look at. We have that model where all teachers are expected to be proficient in the use of technology, or they're held on their current length and salary steps. They have to go through an assessment process. It's also important to establish an action plan, because if you monitor something, it's going to get done. So it's ongoing. We monitor it, we check up, and we see how it's working throughout the year. There's a challenge I see for leaders of technology. Some of the leaders, you have to understand what some of these emerging technologies are. You have to have, again, a vision for using it and transforming it from a school improvement perspective. And as Pete says, you have to lead by example. You have to walk the talk. If you have school leaders that are informed and comfortable with technology, they'll become the key players in leading and supporting that technology integration activities. If you have a principal or a superintendent or director that use the technology and model that, then that's going to become a good model for your teachers. So leading by example, I think, is also important. But then we also have a challenge for teachers, and the challenge for teachers are the big three: the time, the access, and the training. When will the teachers be able to learn? You know, we talked about online learning. I think the first day of the week meeting that we have, we put in some learning into that. What access will teachers have to the technology, and what kind of training or support will be available to them? So these are the challenges. Some of the steps that you might want to consider, I think, that would bring some success to you is to provide flexible scheduling, such as our late arrival times, provide options such as online learning, have after-school classes, have weekend classes, develop workshops during the day if you can find time to get day release. You also have to provide access to what is called appropriate hardware and software. And appropriate would be curriculum-driven. Hardware and software should be driven by curriculum. You're not going to go out and just bring in technology for the sake of technology. It has to support the curriculum. And as Peter also was saying, is he calls it HR to PD. I'm calling it PeopleWare. And PeopleWare is the just-in-time support versus the just-in-case training, or just-in-case workshops. Just in case they need this, we'll have a workshop on that topic. I think it's crucial for schools to provide PeopleWare, and these are people who are on-site that will support and provide that just-in-time assistance after the technology is in place. A train-the-trainer model is one example of that. We have several teachers that work with me on an ongoing basis, on a volunteer basis, to work with integrating technology into the classroom. We meet on a weekly basis talking about what's going on in the classroom, how can we support that, and we have workshops and different ways to help teachers. And providing incentives for participation, salary advancement is a popular option, but we have a different way to provide an incentive, and our incentive is a one-to-one solution for teachers. And we have a program that we've nicknamed Power Rangers, and it's our staff development laptop initiative that started about 6 years ago. It has and continues to be voluntary in participation. Teachers commit to a 16-hour yearly commitment of staff development. They will either give or receive 8 hours of staff development each semester. And that it's very open-ended how teachers do that. It could be an online class, they could do a workshop, they could work one-to-one. They develop a goal in the beginning of the year of what they want to accomplish with technology and how that's going to support their class instruction, and then they work through that goal throughout the year. We have a monthly meeting, which includes lunch for the teachers that are new to the program. Anyone who's new to the program, each year we invite another group of teachers in. And so we meet and we review best practices. We talk about how technology can be used effectively. And it also has an observation and mentoring capacity built into it, where teachers who have been in the program serve as mentors to new teachers coming in. And we expect teachers to participate in some type of observation, whether either being observed or observe another teacher using technology. I think one of the things that also makes it very successful is we have a listserv that we collaborate on, and that means that there's many experts out there. I'm not the sole expert. Our advisor teachers are not the sole experts, but if you are having difficulty, if you are planning a project and you want assistance, you can send a message out to the Power Rangers, and I guarantee within an hour you'll get 5 or 6 responses back, because now our program is built to about 320 teachers, and we're in a staff of about 350 in our building. Success is recognized and celebrated at the end of each year. We have a grand luncheon, and we celebrate our success. And last year, we did a really interesting award certificate. We did a peer recognition award where we made up certificates recognizing our peers for cultivating our seeds of knowledge. And so what you see up on the left-hand side is all the certificates that were generated to other people in the building, and these weren't always people in the laptop program. These could have been to support personnel, and what we did with each of those certificates, we attached a package of seats. And so we delivered those certificates, and as I go around the building today, I still see people with their framed certificates over their desk because they cultivated the seeds of knowledge in some other person in the school. So there's just some examples of the ways that we celebrate some of our success. Some of the reasons why I think it works, the adult learning is focused on student achievement. That's always our goal. It's not about the technology. It's about learning to integrate the technologies that's going to improve the student learning. We have principals, administrators, and teachers all involved in the planning. It's not something that I go and plan. I meet with the directors, I meet with the teachers, I meet with the administrators, and we decide what's best for the teachers and for the students. The 24/7 access to technology provides that anywhere, anytime learning, so that they have the technology with them, they can learn on their time, when they have time. And I hear stories of people at their son or daughter's baseball practice or softball practice, and they'll be sitting in the grandstands with their laptop on their lap, working on some project or working on something for their classroom. The peer collaboration and support provides the on-site and just-in-time learning, because we have the mentor model in place. We have the Ranger advisor teachers, which we affectionately call the Rat Pack, that are out there supporting the teachers and supporting each other. And we also promote risk-taking and experimentation. So like if you want to try something, we'll see if we can work you through that. I have one slide on if you were going to do some successful workshops, basically that these are some things that you could try. It's not really related to the whole thought of professional development, but just some ideas I had on how you can do a workshop, making sure that its immediate value is recognized in a workshop. You know, what can I do on Monday? Always incorporate some fun and humor, some sharing of ideas. Have a motivational orientation, a motivational summary, and always have an assessment and a follow-up. Follow up in your workshops. What was most important to you? What was it that you'd like to change or see done differently so we can plan future workshops that are of value? In your handout, I think there's a slide that has some research that's backing why this is successful and how you could do this in your district, and there's some links and things that you can have that might help you out in planning as well.
Okay.
There you go. Thank you.
I find the whole concept of giving a laptop to every teacher as part of PD a very interesting, a very motivational type of a program.
Yeah, you're internet connection up.
Yeah, great. Okay, maybe Jakes will talk about blogs, wikis, and other cutting edge methods of PD.
Good morning. Can everybody hear me? Is that a fairly good level? Okay. My name is David Jakes, although you probably already know that from Hall's presentation. Did you get sick of seeing my face? Because I certainly did. What I'm going to talk about is I'm going to take a focus on personal learning environments and using some of the cutting edge, in fact, bleeding edge technologies to actually define your own personal digital learning environment, your own personal network. And the graphic that I chose for the introductory slide is very, very important, because kinds of tools that are emerging online give us the capability to connect and ability to tap into really everyone, the expertise of everyone. In 2006, everybody can participate and everybody can contribute. And there's a lot of people out there that have a lot to say and a lot to contribute, a lot of good ideas out there. So I'll start off with a very bold statement, and that's this. I've learned more in the last year about technology and the application to learning than I have in the previous 5. And that's all through these digital technologies. This is all about connecting to people and ideas and resources. I've seen ideas that I would have never seen, resources that I would have never seen, and I've not been tapped into my own personally defined network. And that's done through these kinds of tools. And these are new information tools. Give me a show of hands. How many people could right now define and understand what a blog is? How about a wiki? How many people have contributed to a wiki? How about podcasts? You saw I'll do a little bit about that.
Sure.
How about these two social bookmarking sites, Furl and Delicious? Okay. How about Flickr? This is my favorite. The shameless plug for myself and Joe Brennan this afternoon. If you're individual visual literacy, come see our visual literacy presentation. We do a lot with Flickr and show how you can leverage that particular tool for visual literacy. How about aggregator software like Bloglines? Okay. And how about RSS technology, which pulls this all together? Okay, all right. What I'm going to do is take you through this. I'm going to show you some of the applications and how they work and how they relate to personal learning, professional development networks. And I'm going to show you how you can get started, because this is really, really exciting information. It's a chance to connect. Again, I'm going to keep emphasizing that, but in a lot of ways, it's a chance to gauge what your beliefs are and have them challenged and respond accordingly. How many people get a magazine like Time? Okay. Where does that, every month or every week, where does that magazine come to? Comes to your mailbox, right? Okay. And who delivers that? The mail person. I said mailman in the presentation. I got trolled for that. Mail person. Okay. So what's going to happen is you're going to get this content. It's going to be delivered directly to your mailbox. And someone's going to do that. All right. Well, here's my mailbox. And put this all together right off the bat before I get into the actual resources themselves. Blogs, wikis, podcasts, Flickr, Delicious, and various websites now. And this is the completely exciting part of this, is because we see a lot of this RSS technology transferring over to websites. All these kinds of resources that everybody can contribute really to produce something called an RSS feed. It stands for really simple syndication. So here's the idea. These tools, blogs, wikis, and so on, all produce a content stream. And that content stream is delivered via the RSS feed, much in the same way that Time Magazine is delivered by your mail person. With me so far? Okay. And so where does all that information flow into? Well, it flows into something called your mailbox or your aggregator. All right. So all these variety of resources, blogs, wikis, podcasts, and so on, all have the capability to produce content stream. And everyone in here has the capability to really walk out of here tonight and participate in this, actually contribute content to these different kinds of resources. Again, they produce a content feed, and that's collected in one space in your aggregator. Okay? All right, well, here's how it works. So we have blogs, wikis, Flickr, Delicious, for all podcasts, and various websites. See that they all again produce various RSS feeds, and those all come into my mailbox. All right, so let me just take you through some of these resources. This is my particular blog. It's called The Strength of Weak Ties. It's a reference to the ability to connect to people all over the world, literally, through these weak digital ties. So you can have access. Does anybody blog in here actually? Okay. This is a challenge. And if you're ever wondering what the value of blogging is to students, try blogging once. And try having people out there that are very, very intelligent. David Warlick, Paul Davidson, Will Richardson. Have those people read your stuff. You don't want to say anything stupid. Okay? You've got to really write. And it's the completely most authentic audience that you can possibly have. That's the value of blogging in school today. Okay? Because the technology, in my opinion, should always support a fundamental literacy that we believe in schools. And in this case, it's writing. Blogging does support that. So if you want to see what I have to say about technology, you can tap into my blog. You can go over to, this is the Tech Learning blog. And there I am again. I do this every Thursday, and we have four very, very talented other individuals. Miguel Gillen out of Texas, Wes Fryer, Terry Peterson, and David Warlick all contribute to that. And then, here's Will's blog, Will Richardson. If you haven't read Will, you should. He's one of the hottest speakers and the hottest technology people now in the country. And I'm going to show you where you can get all these addresses in a second. And then, of course, there's this. Now, my question for you is, how many of you have a MySpace account right now? That's very good, three or four of you. If you're talking about professional development, about personal learning, you better get a MySpace account and see what it's all about, because your kids are doing it. It's amazing. So the first tool is our blogs that allow anybody to have their say. But if you're capable of tapping into the people that have a lot to say and are very technology literate, you can get a lot of ideas very quickly, and those are delivered to you in your mailbox or aggregator. All right, let's talk about wikis for a second. This is my particular wiki, and if you don't know what a wiki is, think of a collaborative website that anybody can edit. Okay? For instance, this is the wiki here. If I want to go to 15 minutes, I just click there, and I can add, just come in here and click on edit. And what that does is pull up an editable interface. Okay, and I can add my content. That's open to anybody in the world to be able to go ahead and add their content to that. Where this comes into play is if you take a look at this particular resource. We had a summit last year in our district in Downers Grove. I'm from District 99 Downers Grove. I'm the instructional technology coordinator. And what we did is we had David Warlick in, and what we did is we basically ran the whole entire conference, the two-day summit, through a wiki tool. That means that all our participants had the capability to publish to the wiki their ideas and go back over the course of the year, and after they got to try some of these Web 2.0 technologies, blogs, wikis, and so on, and add content to that. So you can go ahead, and the conference resources, while I have this presentation up, if you want to take a look at any of the kinds of resources that our collaborative group established, you can do that. The power of a wiki tool is, I'm going to do that. Power of the wiki tool is collaborative web publishing. Okay, here's another example of that. This takes a little while long to load. This is from Bud the Teacher. If you're in the blogging, you probably know of Bud Hunt. But this is Bud's page. This is a wiki, of course. And it's his page on blog policy. So in other words, he has a wiki that's established that anybody in the world that's interested in establishing policy, blog policy, can go on and contribute to. And this is a great resource if you're thinking about blogging in school. You can tap in and take advantage of all the expertise that's contained on this particular page. So the idea here is that if I've got a blog, I can have my say. I can contribute to what I know about technology to this global conversation. It's a very personal thing. With a wiki, I can do it in a collaborative sense. So think about a wiki tool that you might have in your school that focuses on effective applications of instructional technology that everybody can jump onto and add their content. You're going to be able to deliver a really nice set of resources that way, a shared collaborative space for contribution about a particular topic. Okay? Lots of you can tap into these. And by the way, what does this produce? Anybody have an idea? As one of these new social software tools, it produces an RSS feed, right? So anytime this is updated, where do you get notified? In your aggregator. Okay? So you know, hey, there's new content here. So I'm on my prep period, for example, and I spend maybe 15 minutes a day taking a look in my aggregator if I'm a teacher. Or if I'm an instructional technology coordinator, maybe I spend a little bit more time on it. Okay? So every time new content is produced, it feeds in the aggregator and lets me know that I've got new content. I'm not going to do anything with Flickr here, but I do want to go over Delicious. And everybody has, at one time or another, made a bookmark or made a favorite in the browser. And this particular resource is free, and everything I'm showing here is really free. What this does is allow you to upload your bookmarks into a site online. And that's not really anything earth-shaking, but what is very nice about that is you can go ahead and you can categorize those particular resources that you upload by something called a tag. And a tag is something that the user gets to define and place and really categorize their resource by. For example, in collaboration, I've tagged these 11 resources with the collaboration tag. Now, what's interesting about this, if you scroll down, guess what this does? This one particular folder on collaboration, or that tag on collaboration, produces an RSS feed. So if you know how to find these in Delicious, what can you do? would make sense. I can come over, and here is West Fryer in Texas, and what I can do is I can subscribe to any of Wes's folders or tags, and those resources, anytime Wes updates something on, scroll down here a little bit, Wes needs to get a life. But here's digital storytelling. Wes is a Rhodes Scholar, extremely intelligent man. And so Wes, I'm very interested in digital storytelling, as many of you know, so I can subscribe to Wes's RSS feed out of his delicious tag for digital storytelling. It's a mouthful there. And that produces an RSS feed. So every time Wes adds content to his delicious account, I'm notified of it on that particular tag. So I can tap into all these individuals out there. Now I get to see what an individual writes and thinks through a blog. I can get to see what a group writes and thinks in a collaborative wiki. And I get to see what they're posting online. Okay, and over the course of the last year, as I mentioned, I learned so much, is because I get fed these feeds from delicious resources I would have never, ever found or seen individually. One of the ways that eBay talks about their site is they talk about the power of all of us. And that's really what this is. It's about having a global community that you can personally define that feeds you resources and ideas that can move you in a personal direction. Okay? This is my favorite site of all time. Let's see if it works. This is LiveMarks. Okay? And what you're doing is on the left, this is a live feed out of Delicious, the website itself. And what you're doing on the right-hand side is you're seeing bookmarks or websites flow automatically into Delicious. Those are people all over the world right now capturing and storing live right in front of your face. That's what's flowing into the Delicious servers right now. So I sit at my desk for hours and just stare at it. That's all I do. I go, oh, good, let me click on this. Okay? So, you know, what a great screensaver idea. Sit there and just wait. All right. Jeff, how much time do I have?
I have plenty of time.
Okay.
I gave you a lot.
You gave me a lot of time? Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Podcast is another thing. This is David's. This is his Connect Learning. And you saw how easy it was to do podcasting. I was at the McCall Conference in Michigan about a month ago. And I was walking through the exhibit hall. And there was a student showcase, and I'm walking through there, and a couple of third graders came up, a couple of girls, and tugged on my jacket and said, can you come see what we're doing in technology? And so they took me over, and they've got, drawing a blank now, Apple product GarageBand. And they're third graders on podcasting and producing podcasts. And I said to the girls, I go, what do you like about this? And they said, well, we get to tell everybody in the world what we're doing in our class. Okay, maybe a canned response, a coach response. But what I did is I asked them, I said, how important is this to you, to your learning? And they sort of looked at me like, what didn't you get about what we just told you about the time? But then again, I started thinking about, well, maybe they didn't understand the question. So I rephrased it, and they still didn't answer. And I really thought that when I had a chance to think about it, I truly believe that they didn't understand the question because they couldn't consider any other option. That here's third graders, and that this is so seamless and integrated what they do in terms of their learning, that's just natural for them. So that's maybe my interpretation. But podcasts, as you know, are MP3 files downloaded. Download them anywhere. Yeah, kids are doing this. Classrooms are doing this. There's a lot of different kinds of resources you can tap in. I personally don't listen to too many of them. I'll make that a statement. I don't listen to them in my car. A lot of people will plug them in and listen to them in their car. And I just want to listen to some music. I spend enough time with technology. Perhaps I shouldn't say that, but that's very true. I'm back. All right, well, let's take a look at websites. And if we take a look at History, this is the History Channel. And one of the most exciting things about RSS technology now is migrating over to the website side of things. And people are retrofitting websites or producing websites that have RSS streams as well. So if I scroll down, take a look. This is, by the way, this day in history. So if I scroll down, I can see that this has an RSS feed. So if I'm a history teacher, I can go ahead and capture that particular feed, and I get a daily update of what happens in today in history. This is sort of interesting. This is topics.net, and this is 360,000 RSS feeds. So you can come up here, and if you click here, I have a Nissan Maxima, so I can get an RSS feed for a Nissan Maxima. So anytime Nissan produces more information about my car, I can get it. But look at the kinds of things: beach volleyball, kart racing, various companies, various medications, education, various foods, and on it goes. Okay, so if you're there's health, take a look at your health teacher and tap into all the latest, greatest information on these particular topics. It's topics.net. USA Today. So if you haven't think these technologies are gone mainstream, take a look at USA Today. Those are all a whole variety of RSS. If you see the XML, by the way, these are called chiclets. How many of you remember the chiclets? So, raise your hand if you don't have a clue what I'm talking about. Yeah, we don't like you very much. Yeah. Chiclets, look at all the different topics you can tap into. Okay. And then here, that's the same thing. All right, well, you've got all these kinds of resources. Everyone in you in here today had the capability with a little bit of personal learning to go on and produce content and upload that content into any of these kinds of tools. Since I have just about a minute or so, a little bit of time. Flickr, by the way, if you're familiar with Flickr? Flickr is an online photo sharing site. It is by far one of the greatest repositories of visual information that exists. It's been around for about 2.5 years. Last time I checked, it was over 117 million photographs. And there's a tremendous amount of way to take that content and repurpose that for kids. Okay, that's just my particular account. And of course, this has likewise an RSS feed. So I got all these different kinds of resources flowing into me. And here's where it comes. This is my aggregator. Okay, and if I go over to my feeds, by the way, this is an online aggregator, and I favor that because I can get to my feeds anytime I want to. And I monitor 104 feeds a day. And that's actually about average for technology people. But everywhere you see where it's black, that's new content that's flowing in. All right, here's Miguel Gulen's blog. If I click there, I'm getting a blog feed. Okay? And over here is a Catchy Colors photo blog. So there's another blog, the visual information coming in there. You notice here's a delicious feed that's coming in here. In. If I scroll down a little bit further, I never find this one I want. There's podcast feeds that come in here. So all of those things that were around my aggregator, all the things that we're feeding content in, are captured and provide one space for me to see all this information. So it's one location, one mailbox that accepts multiple content feeds. Different kinds of resources from people all over the world that like to tap into ideas and content. It's just an amazing, amazing experience. You get very good at reading and processing through what's good and what's not. Just to show you, if you wanted to go see, this is Dean Shersky from Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. If you want to see what Dean, if you like what Dean has to say, you can always go ahead and clip this. And clipping that allows you to put that into folders within blog lines. Pops up here. Basically, what that means is you go ahead and put it in there and never read it again. It's a bad joke, sorry. All right, so if you'd like to get started and you want to see some good blogs, what I'm going to do is just type in this is jakesonline.org, and if I go to blogroll.com or .html, these are the people that I think would provide a very, very good start if you're interested in pursuing and taking a look at what people have to say with blogs. These are all blogs, by the way. There's no other kind of resource there. And I put a link there for blog lines. So give yourself an opportunity to define your own network, your own learning experiences. And when you have time, you can tap into all this great content that's out there, and it feeds directly into you. encourage your teachers, if you're in a role like myself, instructional technology coordinator, we've had teachers step in with this, get 4 or 5 peaks, and they take a look at those every couple days. And that's a real nice start on helping them have some professional development, personal professional development, when they do have the time. Thank you.
We've had 3 very interesting presentations talking about online learning as transformational technology, talking about professional learning communities within a school, and talking about personal learning communities. I'm sure there are many questions or points of discussion that people want to bring up, so let's open them up to the floor. Anybody want to? Yes, ma'am.
Do you have an example of a good one, like K-3? We're doing a blogging workshop.
Why is that? I mean, one of the things I would suggest doing, seriously, is going to, let me show you what this is. Now I'm going to David's site. All right, let me do this.
While David's doing that, a good site is Willow Web.
Willow Web?
Willow Web. I'm not sure if it's .org or what the
David Warlick, if you have a chance to see him, David's going to, if you like that topic, David's going to do a whole session this afternoon on Web 2.0 tools. One of the things I'm going to suggest is going to Class Vlogmeister, and David could point you very directly. He's more familiar with that. He's got like 227,000 users of this resource, and one of the nice things about this, if you want to take some steps into blogging, what this does is, you know, there's a lot of concerns about that in schools. You know, you have to think very carefully through some of the policies that relate to blogging with kids. But the nice thing about this is that when the student posts, the teacher actually has to okay it before it gets posted online live. So there's that checks and balances a little bit. So I know that within that context, he would be able to give you a very good couple examples of young kids that are doing blogs. There's actually a lot of them. I'm not just that familiar with that.
Other questions? Yes.
How do you go about setting up, and where do you go set up your aggregator?
I would suggest going to bloglines.com, and it's free. It's easy. And what's going to happen is, and I can never ever find this, but let me see if I've got it installed here. I don't. On the Blogline site, once you have an account, they have a little button that you can drag up to your upper bar. And when you land on a resource that does produce an RSS feed, you just click subscribe to Bloglines. What that'll do is it'll recognize the feed and install the feed directly into your aggregator. It's a very nice tool. It's somewhere, if you see me later in the day, I can track it down for you. But again, this is my favorite. There's a whole host of these kinds of tools out there. But again, that allows you to, once you land on a resource to produce an RSS feed, it automatically will detect it and then install it in your aggregator on the left-hand side like you saw.
Other questions, comments, issues, concerns, blogs, wikis, online learning? Yes?
My question is related a little bit to it. Is time management, information overload, and all these things are coming in.
Her question was about information management and overload, and it's a very real thing with this. I stopped at about 100 feet right there. I couldn't take anymore. There's people that have 250 feet, things like that's nuts. But you know, I don't have a good answer for you, and that's you have a chance to see the kinds of resources. I mean, just amazing stuff. And as I mentioned before, you get very good at processing that content and seeing what's the value in that. I can go through 104 feeds in about 15 minutes and very quickly scan the kinds of content that I think would be valuable for me. You know, the thing is to start off with 5 to 10. See what you're comfortable with. Give it a shot. See if it works for you. And go forward. Our guidance counselors are now stepping into doing blogging accounts and having feeds come in about all the different kinds of things that they deal with. They're just getting started. We start them off with about 5 to 10 feeds. check it twice a week when you have some time. So you take it slow, baby steps first, and build up to a level you'll feel comfortable with. But you do have, there is so much out there, you can't hope to see all of it. But if you tap into the people that are really good, you'll minimize that by tapping into the high quality resources.
Do you have a list of some tools that you've used in order to create some precise here, wikis, et cetera?
Yeah. It's hard to type in front of a live audience. Does that look like me? My sister says, if you ever get abducted, we'll just give the cops the logo. We'll find you. If you go to collections on my site, and there's Read Write Web up on top here. There's Visual Literacy, Flickr, 21st Century Web Tools. You click on the Read Write Web here up on top, you can see there's a whole variety of blog tools. There's wiki tools and wiki resources. And within this particular, here's Edit Me. That, by the way, Edit Me costs, the one that I showed, costs $4.95 a month. That's the price of a school lunch. It gives you the capability to have wiki capability, pretty formidable wiki capability. But there is PB Wiki, Peanut Butter Wiki. It's easy, it's techless. There you go. Okay, wiki name, tech form. Email. Make a wiki. That's all there's to it. You'll get a confirmation in your email, and you go ahead and click on it, and you'll have the capability to build a wiki and then distribute that to anybody that wants to edit content. Post it on a web school website. So there's a whole host of tools. Luckily for us, I just shut everything down. It's all free. And that was, again, back at my site. And then collections, the Read Write Web here. If you're interested in a Delicious account, let's see if it's on there. There's RSS, there's Flickr resources, there's Delicious. If you want to subscribe to my Delicious account, you can. See what I'm bookmarking, so.
Other questions? Yes. Charlene?
Partly the collaborative culture that we have at the school already, and that actually has promoted a lot of what the success in the program is. Also that we started small, and we didn't bring everybody in all at once. We started with 50 teachers in the first year, and we developed the program on that first cadre and expected them to then be mentors for the next group that came in. So we built the program over time. It wasn't something that we said, okay, all these teachers are going to be part of this program. So it's a long process. It's been about 5 to 6 years to get to the point where we are right now. But continuing to make it voluntary, I think, is important. Continuing to maintain the equipment. One of the things I didn't mention on how we retrofit the computers every year. Teachers come in over the summer. We re-image the computers, put the current software. The hardware is replaced every 4 years, and it's always owned by the district. So we never give the teachers a laptop in exchange for that staff development. It's something that we retain the ownership of. And that way, the teachers will always have technology that's reliable. If something breaks down, they come to me. We swap them with another laptop. We put it into repair. They get a loaner for the day if we can, you know, repair their current laptop. Sometimes we have to swap them to a new computer. So they always have something they can rely on, and they have someone they can come to when they need help. Whether it's within their mentoring group, within their, we put them in technology teams within their curricular area, whether it's, we have a full-time staff development lab where we are open every day after school, there's always someone available to help. And I think that those are real critical components. The people where it's important, as well as maintaining the hardware, maintaining the software, and having everything up to date and matching what's in the school. So start small, think big. Yes.
Question for PHP, the Accelerate View. Did you say that was free for people to use, and just if you're in New York?
I don't know what their policy is outside of New York, but that is basically the school districts in New York pay that
self-directed learning in various ways. You know, with David's way, you're actually going out there on a regular basis and seeing what's out there, constructing your own set of resources. With Charlene's, it's a collaborative effort within the building, and with Accelerate U, teachers come up with the ideas for the professional development. So it's all building from the ground up, which I think is a really nice line going across all three methodologies here.
Have you seen Star Online? That's a resource that would be available for Illinois schools. It's out of Western Illinois. I'm not going to be able to speak very intelligently about it, but go.
We have some teachers participating in Star Online as well. For the first couple of years of the program, there was a scholarship from SBC that covered the tuition. Now it's you have to pay for it, but it's very, very reasonable. What's nice about the Star Online modules is that they are moderated. They're not leader-led or instructor-led, but there's a moderator within. And the focus on learning activities and the main topic is integration. Every module that you complete in Star Online has to have an integration component in order for you to get the certificate. You can also combine modules together and get grad credit through Western Illinois University. So if you are just using it for staff development, you can go through it that way, and it's very reasonable. If you want to apply for graduate credit, you can combine the courses and get graduate credit as well. It's very, very reasonable through, I think ICE gives a discount or something through ILTCE or through ICE.
Where can I go to see their classes?
I would have to log in. Well, no, you can see. Actually, there's modules there. They also have a list of the modules. It'll tell you how many hours it takes to complete a module, so you know up front what the commitment is. We're using this in our district as part of, we also run something called University of Stevenson, where we have after-school classes that are led by some of the teachers or by myself, and as part of that opportunity to learn on their own time, they can subscribe to Star Online and complete modules through this as well. And that way, if they go through Star Online, they get credit towards their salary advancement. So by completing so many continuing education credits, they can apply Star Online learning to that as well. That's what I thought. There's a discount through ICE. This year was the first year that they brought that online, or brought that, yeah. But again, the whole thing is based on integration. You cannot pass one of these classes without developing a lesson plan and having it approved by the moderators at Western Illinois University. So we have some secretaries that have actually gone through some of the modules because they wanted to learn some of the techniques, and they had to, you know, pretend that they were teachers or assume the role of a teacher and see what it's like to be an educator and develop a lesson plan to work with students. So whether it was working one-on-one with a student and developing a database, we had secretaries that have completed these as well.
Yes?
I was just going to say, also, ICE gives you passwords for dynamic learning if you're a very visual person.
Okay, you can bring that one. Okay, more learning on your own, atomiclearning.com. If you're an ICE member, you get access to this, and these are, Ken Weissman also authored a lot of these back there, right, Ken? What's the topic? On searching? You're updating your searching one?
Perfect.
Is it
updating, it's searching too.
Okay, so Ken has done a lot of these, and great job on what Ken has done. For Macintosh Windows, there's also curriculum tools here, and if you're an ICE member, you have access to this at no extra charge.
Other questions? Anybody else? Yes.
Question for Charlene. You mentioned assessment, that you assess staff development. Can you share some ways that you've done that?
What we've done, because the salaries of the teachers are tied into the proficiency level, we have proficiency requirements for teachers in three areas of technology, and voice, data, and video. And so when teachers come to Stevenson, they have 2 years from the hire date to show that they're proficient in these areas. The staff development that we provide throughout the year is geared or targeting these proficiency areas. So we have weekly sessions that we offer during planning periods where teachers can come in during their planning time and learn a topic of the week. And that all addresses what they need to know as teachers in being proficient in data technology. And then at the end, or just before their 2 year time is up, they'll come in and they'll go through an assessment packet demonstrating that they can open a word processor and do a word processing document, that they can put their grades in a grade book, that they can navigate the internet successfully, that they can work with email. So they come to the staff development lab and they sit with the staff, with me or my assistant, and they actually demonstrate that proficiency. That whole process, there's seven areas, it takes about 2.5 hours if they want to sit down and do it all at once. We try to encourage them to spread that time out, but it's usually during finals week of their second year that they're all scrambling down. It's not as difficult this year because we hire maybe 20 to 30 teachers a year, and so we only have that many. But when we first brought the program in, we had 300 and some teachers to do, and or 200 and some at that time, and we had to do that within 3 years. So it was much more difficult. For the first time, though, this year, we have proficiency requirements for staff as well. So our big push right now is to bring almost our 200 staff members through the same process, and that every Wednesday is our proficiency assessment day, and we're bringing staff down to work on their proficiency. So by the time that this June comes, all of our teachers and all of our staff, we know we'll have a core level proficiency in technology. So we can take from there and bring other technologies in because we know what they can do.
You want a classic, the classic resource on evaluating professional development is, in my opinion, is this, Evaluating Professional Development by Thomas Gusty out of the University of Kentucky. It's an outstanding book, and it talks about all the various levels and the ways in which you can evaluate professional development. It's very, very good.
I like that laptop program for the teachers. One problem for four. How do you find money for those? Is that a grant?
I think the initial, when we started the program, we had some grant money. And that brought the first group. But as we've added to the program, we've taken away some of the computers that we would normally be putting into the classroom. So where our goal was to, you know, have a computer in every classroom, we no longer have a computer in every classroom because now we have less computers that we have to buy because the teachers carry the computers with them. So it's, we're using the same money that we've always had, but we've redistributed it in different ways. But certainly, you know, I would encourage to apply for a grant to start with. And we did that in the first year, and we've proven that it really helped in instruction, and the board said go ahead and continue that program. So we grew slowly. You can't throw a lot of money in it all at once, but start with a little bit and then work up from there. But as you bring more laptops in, and the prices of them certainly have come down a lot than what they were when we first started the program, you can lessen the amount of computers that you have in the classroom. We also found that as teachers came into the program, even though not all the teachers were involved, because we were working in curriculum teams, they were bringing back activities and things to their team because they had access to the technology that they would be developing lessons and developing things that everybody on the team benefited and all the students benefited as well. So even if you don't get all the teachers involved, I think one teacher on a team empowered with that technology really changes the focus of instruction.
And also, do you have staff that are dedicated to staff development for those computers, or is it under the IT umbrella?
Can you define that again, please?
Okay, for the programs, the 50 computer or 300 computer stuff now you have IT staff that they are ready to mobilize in case they have a problem, or it's under the umbrella of the IT services in the district?
It's more under me. It's under staff development, so anything that happens with the laptop goes through me. And that was where, if they have problems with it, I have a loaner that I can give to them, then I'll turn that into the help desk and send that in for repair if it has to be done. But it all basically goes through, you know, if you have a problem with your laptop, they come to me first. Because sometimes it is a software issue, and I can help troubleshoot that. If it's a hardware issue, I know who to bring it to get it repaired or whether or not I need to swap a laptop out. Did that answer your question? Yes, Jeff.
Question for you, Shirley. After people have been in your Power Rangers program for a while, do they have to re-up for a period of time?
They're lifetime members,
okay.
Unless they, you know, decide to opt out. And we did have one teacher in the first year or two that did opt out. We actually had two teachers that backed out. And later on, that same teacher came back. And he had a very negative experience with technology. His laptop was always one that was breaking, and it was always, you know, our fault type of thing, and it just wasn't working for him. 2 years later, that teacher's back in the program. He reapplied. He comes and he says, you know, I don't know why I backed out of it before. I'm doing great things. And, you know, technology it's gotten better. So the computer's okay now. It's no longer, you know, our fault. But so he's come back in and he's doing, you know, just as much as everybody else and really getting into the staff development and the monthly meetings that we're doing and collaborating. So it's lifetime unless you want to back out. It's your choice.
How do you go about compensating those people? Are they getting release time or are they getting paid in any way or is it just a professional?
Which people?
The Power Rangers, those are the ones that are helping those out?
Well, the Rat Pack. You mean, well, we have like the 7 content area teachers that help me. That, okay, we call them the Rat Pack. They get released from a supervision. So instead of having to do a study hall one day a week, they use that time for planning and working with the program. So that's their compensation. They don't get any stipends or anything other than getting released from supervision. So they have good hearts.
Just a quick question for the group. Is anybody in this area using Gen Yes for professional development? I just introduce it with something that I was going to go into, but didn't have the time so quickly. What's the most abundant resource in your school right now? Students. And it's a program that formally trains students with under the auspices of a coordinating teacher to be able to work with volunteer teachers to do projects and to train them. And not only, you know, you're incorporating kids into the program, and they get a lot out of this in terms of leadership and learning how to teach and so on, but this abundant resource, and it's a structured program. So they really do go through some training on how to work with teachers. They get a consultant that works with them to help them incorporate a lot of the tools that they may not know about. And then they go to the teacher and they actually ask the teacher, what are you working on? What would be helpful for you? That kind of thing. And the teacher works with them for a semester, or they work for the teacher for a semester, either teaching the teacher how to do things or actually creating a project that would be helpful for the classroom teacher. To me, that's talking about scaling and being able to do a lot of professional development to a lot of teachers with a lot of different needs. Using the students is a tremendous, and by the way, once you get them in middle school, they're with you all through high school. They just get better as the years go on. And we're not talking about, they have programs here for technical support, but we're talking about actual, I can help you create a blog, I can help you put up, get your aggregator going, that kind of thing. So I would turn to the most abundant resource that's in your school, your kids, and utilize them. This is the generation that is connected with technology. And if you think about it, we want responsible kids, but we don't give them enough responsibility. This is a great way to give them responsibility that really helps you, and it's an inexpensive resource also.
Just to add to that, everything that every school that's doing Gen Y does gets posted and can be shared, and there's an assessment component built in everything that gets posted. So it isn't just tech support, it really is an integration.
David, question about your counselors are signing up for these flags. I'm wondering, do you have a site that for a novice person that wants to learn more about these topics, you would definitely recommend that they start?
You'll never guess where I'm going to go. Instead of going to collections, go to collaboration. And I've got a explanation of the tools and explanation of the various kinds of websites. That's one place that are about a 3-page document that will put it all together for you. You can read that. I would suggest that's a good place to start. Certainly not the only one. There's also a handout, I don't know if everybody got one in the back or back under the stool, you can pick it up. It also explains some other kinds of things and lists some other resources related to your question.
Okay, my replacement wristwatch, tells me that it's about time to end this session. I think we want to thank Pete and Charlene and Dave for their
thank you for your
excellent questions and discussions. And they're all around. I'm sure they'll be interested and willing to talk and enjoy the rest of your day.